You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
And I must admit, when the first time you turn a lightsaber on, you make the noise.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm so sorry that everybody does that.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Dagobah Dispatch, where we talk all Star Wars all the time. Or at least for as long as producer Sammy Junio will tolerate us. We have a lot to get to this week. We have an interview with the four villains of Ahsoka who joined us at Star Wars Celebration. We have some big news about a big Star Wars operation shutting down shop. And are we going to have some Star Wars shows shutting down shop as well due to the writer's strike? All that, plus your reaction to last week's episode where a big debate broke out over Ewoks and music. We'll get back into it for better or for worse. I'm Dalton Ross, joined as always by Devin Kogan. How you doing, Devin?
Hello, hello. Excited to get into it. Hopefully this will be less contentious than last week. We did a little bit of arguing when it came to Star Wars music. In a playful arguing, friendly arguing.
Yeah, it's a little spicy. Got a little spicy. We'll see if that happens again. You never know when you get the blood boiling a little bit. We've got a bunch of stuff to get to, like I mentioned. Before we get going, I do want to say a few words about our interview this week, even though we have some other stuff to get to before we do run the actual interview. The interview is with Lars Mikkelsen, Diana Lee Inosanto, Ivana Sokno, and Rae Stevenson, who play the four main villains on Ahsoka. And I spoke to the four of them out at Star Wars Celebration in London, and I did a bunch of interviews there, and we've been rolling them out for you all. I hope you've been enjoying them. This just happened to be the week we scheduled to run this interview. And earlier this week, the news broke that Rae Stevenson, who is part of that interview and plays Baylan on Ahsoka, died at the age of 58. It's obviously terrible, terrible news. And our thoughts go out first and foremost to his family and friends and everyone in the cast and crew of Ahsoka. It's super sad. But I'm at least glad that we do have this interview to play for you later, because what you're going to hear in one of his last interviews ever is how much Rae Stevenson loved this role and this show. The guy was ecstatic to be a part of the franchise. He had a huge grin on his face the entire time we spoke. And you're going to hear the way he continually talks about how amazing everyone else on the crew was. He's consistently giving credit to others. And you're going to hear about some really fun stuff he would do on the set that hopefully will give you a vivid picture of the man and what he brought to this role. You're going to obviously meet the character he played in a few months on the show, but this gives a good window into the person. So I know we have some other stuff to get to before that interview with Rae and Lars Mikkelsen, Diana Lee Inosanto, and Ivana Sokno, but I just want you all to think about that when you do listen. And also recognize how, you know, if this is his last role ever, I don't know if he has other stuff waiting to come out or not, but if this is his last role ever, how much it did mean to him. And he's a big part of the show, Devin. That voice you hear in that trailer, and I love the trailer. I've watched it so many times, an embarrassing amount of times. I've watched that trailer. And he's providing that voiceover narration, and that's him. And It was cool to hear. It's cool to see. It was like, I wish you could have been there with me at Celebration. You've done Celebration before and you know what it's like. And he came off that stage after doing that panel and he was just this like hugest grin on his face and was interacting with everyone. It was really, really cool.
That is so cool. And, you know, he's one of those actors I really love. He's been in a lot of things that I really love. He's not a stranger to the Star Wars universe. He voiced Gar Saxon in Rebels and Clone Wars. I and a lot of people know him for his role in the Thor movies. He played Volstagg. I mean, he's one of those actors who's always good in everything wherever he pops up. And it's really heartbreaking. And I'm really, really curious and really looking forward to seeing the, you know, seeing him in this show, because from everything you've said, it sounds like it's always fun to talk to actors who are so excited to be in Star Wars and are just having a great time and are really excited about, you know, and this sounds like a pretty special show overall.
Yeah. And you'll hear it in the interview. Every time I kind of try to ask him about himself, he's like, oh my God, the costumes and like, you know, and just the set design, you walk on the set. It's just like, and it's genuine. It's like feels totally genuine. And so obviously it's terrible news, but I'm glad that you guys are going to get to at least you have this interview and some other ones that he did that show how much this role meant to him. And maybe we can all kind of keep that in mind when we do watch the show when it debuts in August. So anyway, that interview is going to be coming up a little bit later. We have some other business to attend to before that. First off, I always, you know, I've said this, Devin, like, hey, you know, like I always say at the end of the podcast, you know, hey, tell your friends about the podcast and hey, follow the podcast. You know, like that stuff they do on every panel. Like, hey, leave us a review. You know, maybe we'll read it. Well, I do want to read. We got a few reviews that I do want to read. There's one that was left by Beta, I guess, who wrote, love these guys. I'm really enjoying this podcast. Sometimes it feels like I'm sitting around chatting with friends about Star Wars, but then they have these amazing interviews. An enjoyable listen. Thank you very much.
Glad Thank you.
Enjoy hanging out with us. That's all we're doing, hanging out, talking about Star Wars. And we love that you're hanging out with us as well. So thanks so much for that. Really appreciate it. Now let's go to our second review, Devin, which you might be a little more interested in. This one comes from Sir Pauly Browboy, and the headline is, because you leave a headline, then the review, Devin, the headline is Team Yub Nub.
Wow.
And then writes in the actual review, for sure. So Devin, who was, if you missed the show last week, Devin did her list of the top 15 Star Wars songs ever, songs in the actual movies or TV shows. And it was an excellent list, and I agreed with her top four, not in the exact order, but I had the same top four she did, and she did a great job with her list, except for the final entry on her list, which was number 15. Go back and listen to the episode so you can hear how ridiculous it was. She basically put in Victory Celebration as her 15th favorite Star Wars song in any Star Wars property, and Victory Celebration is the song in the new end song. That's the song that finishes the original trilogy. No thanks to the Star Wars, the special edition that came out, Return of the Jedi. It replaced Ewok Celebration, known more colloquially as Yub Nub. That's how we all know it. Devin was just totally raining all over Yub Nub's parade, stomping it, throwing it in the trash, and saying how amazing Victory Celebration is. Well, Devin, Sir Pauly Browboy disagrees.
I thank you for your review, but I wholly disagree with you, and I stand by my Yub Nub slander. But it was really fun. This past week, we've gotten a lot of great tweets and a lot of great comments on social media, reaching out. You know, there's been a couple people who are Team Yub Nub. There's been a couple people who are on my side who are anti-Yub Nub. A lot of talk about, you know, stuff we left off or you know, praising our list for how brilliant it is. So it's been a really fun conversation. So yeah, we love hearing that stuff. So please send us your thoughts. We love arguing about Star Wars, and we love hearing from you guys about your thoughts on Star Wars. But I stand by my list, and my list is perfect. And that's all I have to say about that.
Your list was perfect for 14 spots. Wow. Also on social media, as you mentioned, Terry Mack reached out, said, FYI, totally hashtag Team YubNub. Terry Mack's making a hashtag out of it. Says also really love the Ahsoka cast interview. Now, it seems like everyone's piling on Devin, but hold on. Here comes the Heart Sleeves sent in a tweet. We're going to give, you know, it's like when the president speaks and the opposing party gets their fair time, Devin.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like after you're watching on CNN or wherever you're watching, and then the opposing party comes in and they do their rebuttal. So the Heart Sleeves. Now, this might be a Devin Kogan burner account. I haven't looked into it. The Heart Sleeve says, Yub Nub is awful. And I hated it when I saw Jedi when it premiered. I'm first generation Star Wars, and that change to a galactic celebration was so needed to feel the finality of Jedi. Also, the Mando theme is way too high on the list. It's the best Star Wars music in 30 years. I think she means way too low, or he means way too low, whichever it is. Anyway, you have a Yub Nub defender. I mean, a Yub Nub detractor.
No. Thank you. you know, team victory celebration. But that's one of the fun things is like even people who are like, you know, this person said original Star Wars fan is like, no, this was the one change the special editions got right was
so wrong.
Jettisoning Yub Nub.
Just a false statement, just incorrect in every single way. Listen, I will tell you something the special editions got right. But by somewhat fixing the scene in Hoth with the Wampa, which looked really yes. terrible at first, and at least they added in some good Wampa scenes to at least make it not so pathetic when he just sort of slow-mo chops his arm off. So
yeah, that was definitely an improvement, we'll say.
All right, so listen, it's a Star Wars show with two hosts, and Devin says Yub Nub sucks, and I say Yub Nub is so much better than Victory Celebration, which I believe said sound like warmed over Najee, New Age music. If only we had a third host still that could break the tie. Well, we do have a former third host, Lauren Morgan, who left us unceremoniously recently. Lauren has weighed in, Devin, I want you to know. She has weighed in, and so I think it's only right that she recorded a special message for us.
Oh my gosh.
With her take. So let's all sit back, relax, and see what Lauren Morgan had to say about this raging controversy.
You know, you think you know a person, and then they insult Yub Nub? I leave this podcast, and we insult Yub Nub? What is going on here? I am sorry, but Yub Nub is the superior ending to The Return of the Jedi. The victory celebration... Constantly, it makes me so angry that if I am watching Return of the Jedi on Disney Plus, I literally turn it off, go to YouTube, and find the original ending so I can hear Yub Nub. I mean, come on, Devin. You usually have impeccable taste. What is going on here? And you're making me agree with Dalton. And you know, I don't generally like to agree with Dalton, but here I am agreeing with Dalton because I must defend the integrity of Yub Nub. Good Lord. The other thing is, you just cannot change the ending song of a movie if an entire generation has listened to that song as the end of the movie. Like, it's just, as a child of the 80s, it is very, very upsetting to all of a sudden hear Victory Celebration where Yub Nub should be. It sounds wrong. It is wrong. It's just, it's a travesty. All the changes to Return of the Jedi are a travesty. I cannot even believe that this has happened to Dagobah Dispatch since I have gone, my lord.
It's just everything's fallen apart since she left.
Oh,
she came in hot. She came in real hot.
I'm almost glad that we waited to do this episode until after she left because I feel like I don't think I would survive the recording if she was here.
I will say, Devin, when you first sent me your list, like, hey, all right, here's the list we can talk about like tomorrow on the podcast. I was like, did she make a mistake? Like, is she trolling me? Like Victory Celebration? Like my mouth was on the floor and it was very surprising and I can only imagine Lauren's surprise.
I stand by it. I still think I can't handle Yub Nub. I'm sorry. I think it undercuts the emotional weight of the ending of this incredible trilogy. I think it doesn't make sense to like, there's this like beautiful melancholy moment and I did the chanting Ewoks. It just doesn't do it for me. You know, we've talked a lot on the show about Ewoks many, many times.
Yeah,
and I think they do. Ewoks are best in moderation, in small doses. And I think Yub Nub just kind of pushes it over to maximum Ewok. And look, we all know Lauren. She loves an Ewok. You know, I also love an Ewok, but I stand by this one. But
yeah.
Lauren, I do miss you very much. And I wish you were here to yell at me in person. But
yeah,
thank you for taking time out of your day to yell at me virtually.
If that was your attempt at reconciling with Lauren after you just said that Ewoks need to be held in moderation and like too many Ewoks, that's not going to do it, Lauren Morgan. You want to know the best thing about that Lauren Morgan response? Is that she wasn't done. She then sent a second message. She's like, no, wait, I haven't said enough. She has more to say. Listen to part, ladies and gentlemen, this is the sequel. This is like episode two. Lauren Morgan's response to Devin, she's still going. Take a listen.
Lauren Morgan strikes back.
I am on the record as hating every change they made to Return of the Jedi for the special editions, but what really bothers me about Victory Celebration is that it sounds like it should be playing in a rainforest cafe and not on the forest moon of Endor. It just doesn't match. It doesn't match the visuals on screen. It doesn't match the fact that, obviously, when they first made the movie, that John Williams had written it to the beat of the images on screen. So it just doesn't match like the cuts that are happening now anymore. And also it just feels wrong. It just feels like new agey and weird. And it doesn't have that kind of charm that Yub Nub has. And I know Yub Nub is kind of a weird song. And if you listen to it without the context of it, you're like, oh yeah, this is a pretty strange song. But I just think it fits the sort of charming ending of Return of the Jedi better. And I also really like how when Luke is seeing the Force Ghost, that Yub Nub sort of starts blending into the Star Wars theme that's going to be on the end credits. And I just think it really ends the movie in a much more charming and like correct, like it feels more authentic to Star Wars than Victory Celebration does.
Hear, hear. Cosign.
Ugh, Lauren, I love you. We agree to disagree on this one. This is, you know, I can't get over it. It's no Yub Nub for me.
Well, brace yourself because she sent a third message. No, I'm kidding. She didn't.
See, the thing is, I wouldn't put it past her if anyone would. Oh, God. I'm sorry.
I do. Listen, I do agree with her. I feel like it's just a very generic ending. And I you know, I'm not Ewok crazy by any means. So I get it if you'd be like, yeah, just not feeling the Yub Nub and the Ewoks. I actually would get that. But at least to Lauren's point, it's like a unique and authentic. Well, just Victory Celebration to me is super generic. But
agreed.
If you hate Yub Nub, I guess you would take generic over bad.
I don't think it's generic. I think it's solid, and you know, I think it's number 15 on the list. It's not number one, but you know, I'm Team Victory Celebration all the way. I stand by it. Lauren's rebuttal has only solidified my position. She has not swayed me.
That's right. She's digging in. All right. Well, listen, you guys can continue to weigh in on this hot debate that's raging here on the Day of a Dispatch. Let's get to a few other things before we get into our interview. Some big news about Disney and Florida. There's been a lot of Disney Florida news, let's be honest, over the past year. But the one thing that sort of goes into our territory is the fact that they announced that Disney's closing down the Galactic Star Cruiser. Now, for longtime fans of the show, you know, my mother, you may remember, I was invited to go on the Galactic Star Cruiser, couldn't do it, dates didn't work, so we sent the enraged Lauren Morgan down there instead. And she had a great time. She had a really, really good time there. But it is, it's going away. Here's just basically, we'll give you the news, then we'll react to it. This is from a New York Times article on the closing. It says, after spending hundreds of million dollars to build an immersive Star Wars themed hotel at Walt Disney World, Disney said on Thursday that amid sweeping corporate cost cutting, it would close the underperforming attraction in September, only about 18 months after it opened. The attraction called Galactic Star Cruiser was marketed as part luxury hotel, part theme park ride, part role-playing game. Guests are welcome aboard a 275-year-old space liner and take a celestial voyage on which they might be asked to deliver a secret message, head to the engine room to help repair a fuel valve, or participate in lightsaber training. Disney said the hotel's quote-unquote final voyage would take place September 28th to 30th. Guests who had already booked the hotel after September will be contacted to discuss options to modify their plans, the company said, and new bookings were being paused to prioritize those guests. All visits are two-night stays with a starting cost of more than $4,800 for two people and around $6,000 for a family of four. For authenticity, the 100 cabins at the Florida Hotel have no windows. Instead, stars, planets, and asteroid showers are shown on video screens. So it basically, Devin, you got some experience at Renaissance fairs, I know.
I do love it.
Colonial Williamsburg brought to space age life with actors, and you're a character and you've got missions and all this stuff to do. And it's shutting down after just 18 months. And we know, you know, Galaxy's Edge has been a big success seemingly for Disney parks and stuff. And this just didn't make it at all, Devin. And I think it has to be the price, right?
I think that is correct. You know, I look, we're the biggest Star Wars nerds in the world. We literally host a Star Wars podcast. This is the kind of thing that would be 100% right up our alley. But I think it is the price. I think it's expensive. It's, you know, like the New York Times article says, it's $4,800 for two people. It's $6,000 for a family of four. That's a very pricey vacation. You know, for a lot of families, that's going to be out of reach, whereas something like Galaxy's Edge is much more attainable. It's still immersive. It's still, you can, there's attractions, you know, that you can meet with characters. There's cool stuff to do, but it's a much more affordable price. Whereas this is, I think it's just a little out of a lot of people's reach, which kind of bums me out because, like, you know, when Lauren came back and was, you know, describing all the cool stuff that she got to do, I was like, oh man, I want to go do that. That sounds 100% right up my alley. And so I'm a little bummed that we'll never get to experience this, but I do hope that I'm curious to see what it looks like going forward. I'm curious whether it's a complete shutdown, they're just going to close it and turn it into something else, or if they're going to sort of rethink it a little bit. Like maybe they just turn it into sort of like a generic Star Wars themed hotel where it's less about the experience and the missions and things like that. So it's going to be a little bit more affordable, a little bit less immersive. I can't imagine them just, you know, kind of kicking this all to the curb and taking this, you know, giant facility that they built and blowing it up. So I'm curious whether it'll evolve and sort of take on a new kind of style. But yeah, it did surprise me a little bit. I mean, 18 months is not a very long time. And for them to pull the plug so quickly kind of surprised me. What did you make of this news?
Yeah, I think it's just too expensive. You bring up the biggest question. What do they do with this place now? Right. And I think that is interesting because, like, if you're going to ever do a Star Wars celebration down in Orlando, who wouldn't want to stay at even if they just turn it, like you said, to a Star Wars hotel? Okay, get rid of the actors, get rid of the missions, but like there's Star Wars signage all over the place, which they already have up, presumably. So, and just sort of keep some of those elements in play that, and, you know, take it from $4,800 to $480, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Which is still expensive, but probably what you're going to pay at a really nice Disney hotel these days anyway, I'm guessing. So it's a bummer. They had huge plans on this. I mean, it's a bummer for them because they obviously sunk a lot of money into this and had huge plans. And it just sort of, I think I still remember, Devin, when they first announced the price and it was just cackles on the internet.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Just like, what? You want us to pay $4,800 for two people for two nights? Like, and you could have provided the most amazing experience possible and still at that price, how could it be worth it? Right. I mean, it's just, we know Lauren went there. I almost literally told my daughter I wasn't dropping her off at college to go down to there instead. I was this close. I was like, you know, I mean, she could just take public transportation to school. Like I could, you know, I know I'd miss out on a great memory, but going to Galactic Star Cruiser could be a pretty cool memory too. So I really wanted to do it, but like, you know, if you had told me that, like if I had to pay out of pocket and do it for that price, there's no way. There's just no way.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, kind of out of budget for a lot of Star Wars fans. So I'm not surprised that it closed. But again, I hope that they continue it and they sort of, you know, redevelop it into something that's going to be maybe a little less special, but a little bit more affordable and to still bring some of that like Star Wars magic to people. Because I mean, I think look at Galaxy's Edge. This has been a tremendous success for both Disneyland and Disney World. I mean, it is one of the biggest things that they've done in the last, you know, 15 years. And it is a huge success with the rides and the food and the development and all of these amazing things. And I think, I think, you know, there still is really big money in Star Wars for Disney. And I think it's just a question of how much money and how much money are people willing to pay.
If you could have worked as a character at Galactic Star Cruise, and they just said, hey, you know, Devin Kogan, we just need some characters. We're going to let you create your own character. Like, who do you want to be? What are you doing? Why are you interacting with the guests? What would you do?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm torn between wanting to be a really awesome alien and not wanting to have to deal with the makeup every single day to go to work. Like on one hand, like, oh, it'd be so cool to be a Twi'lek. But then I'm like, oh God, every day, like every Monday morning, you have to get up and put on your head tails and paint yourself green. I'm like, oh no. So I think I'd probably just be like a human engineer or like a rebel spy or something along those lines would be super fun. You know, there's some lightsaber training. If I got to brush up on my lightsaber skills and teach people how to, you know, do cool spins and stuff. Like that would be dope as hell. What about you?
I'd be trying to sell them death sticks.
And then everybody would just say, you're going to go home and rethink your life.
I would give them death sticks. And you know what they'd actually, I'd be peddling drugs at Disney. And then if they took me up on them, they're like, yeah, hit me. I would basically give them like, what are those, like pixie sticks or whatever? Which the sugar and like the little like thin tube. I would just give those to him and be like, all right, keep it on the DL. Here you go. And just give them like, have them hopped up on sugar all day. That's what I would do.
Yeah. And the parents would hate you because the kids would be staying up till 3 in the morning, hopped up on sugar.
It would be pretty creepy if you were their parents. Some dude comes up to your kids, like, want some death sticks and like puts some stuff in your hand. That might not go so well. Anyway, all right. Well, listen, sad to see Galactic Star Cruiser go. Again, the last mission, the final voyage, September 28th to 30th. So if you want to take a ride before it goes away, that's your end date. Listen, at Entertainment Weekly, we are covering the writer's strike a lot. And this really impacts Devin and myself a lot because, you know, shows and movies that we're trying to report on, we don't know what's happening with them. We don't know if people are doing interviews or if the thing's in production, this, that. And so thought real quickly, we would just talk about the Star Wars shows and if they're being impacted. I guess there's, you know, a few we can look at here quickly. Mandalorian is an interesting one, Devin, because they said before season 3 even premiered that the scripts for season 4 were done. Now, you and I both know in this industry, a script being done can mean many things. Like, that script can change. A lot of shows, there's notes to the very last day are coming in, and your sides are changing, which are your script pages. And some scripts are a little more locked. So we don't really know what that means in terms of scripts are done. But at least if they have working scripts, Devin, that gives them a cushion to probably wait out this strike, I would think.
Yeah, I'm very curious to kind of see how that looks. I think my guess would be, especially with Mandalorian, having the scripts done, that allows them to sort of press pause on like starting production, because to our knowledge, they have not started production yet. But like, you know, start developing pre-production, start working on, you know, building sets and figuring out locations and things like that. So that eventually, when the strike is over, they can hit the ground running and, you know, really, really start moving on season 4. Because where I get hesitant is when shows are like, yeah, we've got the scripts done, we can keep producing things without a writer on set. And I think because like you said, so many things change on the day. It's like, oh, we wrote it this way, but we figured out that because of the way this scene is shot and because of the way the door's over here on the set that we're on, we need to completely rechange everything. And so I think trying to shoot things without a writer on set or without, you know, Jon Favreau or Filoni on set is kind of just a recipe for disaster. So I'm curious what the exact timeline will look like, but it is nice that they do already have the scripts kind of ready to go. But I don't think they can continue moving forward until the strike is resolved.
Well, that's what makes Andor really interesting, because there apparently like a WGA member, the Writers Guild of America, and they're not supposed to be doing any work, right? A WGA member wrote on social media that Tony Gilroy, the creator and showrunner of Andor, had been performing producing duties on the show. So while not still writing, had still been doing some of his other work in the producing capacity, and had been doing it sort of after the strike. So Tony Gilroy came out with a quote and said, I discontinued, all caps, all writing and writing-related work on Andor prior to midnight May 1st. After being briefed on the Saturday showrunner meeting, I informed Chris Kaiser at the WGA on Sunday morning that I would also be ceasing all non-writing producing functions. So basically what he's saying was, hey, we had the strike, and then a few days later, there was another meeting. And we had the showrunner meeting, and then I stopped doing producing. So he's saying he did do some producing work for, you know, a few days there. But then he stopped. What do you make of that, Devin, that apparently now Tony Gilroy is not doing any work on Andor, which is in the middle of production?
Yeah, that I think is pretty common. I think a lot of showrunners, you know, because if you're a showrunner, you sort of wear multiple hats. You know, obviously you're a writer, but also sometimes you're a director or you're working as a producer and you're working on all these different things. So certainly in the early days of the strike, there were a lot of cases like this where, you know, some WGA member said, okay, I'm going to halt my writing duties in solidarity with as a WGA member, but I'm going to continue, you know, my shows in production. I'm going to continue working in a producer capacity. You know, Tony Gilroy was one of the ones who said, I'm stepping back. I don't want to cross the picket line. I support the WGA. I'm going to cease all working on Andor in perpetuity until the strike is resolved. That leaves the production in a really interesting place because I think it's no secret that, you know, Tony Gilroy is very much very key to Andor's success. You know, he is the person who has sort of guided the show. It's his vision. You know, he's the one who, especially when we know that Andor season two is very much, it's leading up to like the final days right before Rogue One. Basically, the season ends and then Rogue One begins. They've said that multiple times. So you kind of need Tony Gilroy there to kind of shepherd things and guide things. Now, the production, it kind of depends on where they are in production, right? Like, are they in sort of early days where they're still figuring things out, like working, starting to film new episodes from scratch? Or are they just sort of like picking up, hey, we need to fill in the gaps here. We've got like, you know, this action scene that we can make happen with just our second unit directors and our stunt team. And we don't really need a showrunner or a writer on set. I'm very curious to kind of see what happens because Andor is one of the few projects that actually has a release date. At Star Wars Celebration, Tony Gilroy said it has a release date. It's coming out in August 2024. Now that could change, but it is interesting that that actually supposedly the show does have a deadline that it needs to hit in order to come out in August 2024, as opposed to some of the other shows on this list that don't have an announced release date and could maybe have a little bit more flexibility to shift. So I'm very curious to kind of see how things shape out, or how things shape up. And I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens.
The other one, I guess, noting is the Acolyte, which I believe is near the end of production. It's also confusing. Well, not, I mean, Devin, you have all these shows that are a lot of these Star Wars shows filming in England. Mm-hmm. And there's also, some complications in terms of, well, is this US WGA? Is this contract under UK law? I just want to read you, this is from a press release from the Writers Guild of Great Britain. And by the way, I realize we're getting deep in the weeds here. We'll get out of these weeds in just a second if you don't care about contract law and like all this stuff. But, you know, it does impact when we might see the shows and potentially the Acolyte. But anyway, this is from the Writers Guild of Great Britain. If your contract was made under UK law and you were already under contract at the time the strike was called, you should continue to work normally and comply with the terms of your contract. Pre-existing work in the UK is not considered struck work by the WGA. If your contract was made under US law, you should follow the WGA strike rules. So, you know, I don't know if the Acolyte was, you know, made under WGA strike rules in US law or UK law. But so I can't speak to what it is there, but I do know that that is sort of an interesting wrinkle in these things in terms of some shows being filmed abroad.
It is kind of interesting, specifically when it comes to, you know, like productions in the UK. I know Leslie Headland, who is the creator of The Acolyte, she is a WGA member under the US. But that show is, I know they've been filming for a while. I know they were kind of about to wrap or like just had a couple weeks left of production left to finish when the strike started. So it sounds like that is a show that you know, it sounds like they can maybe move forward and sort of just pick up some of the finished pieces and you know, just film here and there in the UK. But again, I think it's sort of interesting, and there hasn't been a lot of transparency from the studios and things like that. And really, the only shows that we know have a concrete release date are Ahsoka, which is finished and is coming out in August 2024 or 2023. And then Andor season two, which has that release date of August 2024. But again, that could shift depending on where they are in the production schedule, how long the strike lasts, all of these things. But it's kind of interesting to kind of check in, and it sounds like every different Star Wars show is kind of in a different place right now. So I'm very curious to see kind of how things shake out over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we will see. It could be a long, long strike. Right now, a few weeks, probably not going to make a big difference for any of these properties. But if this thing keeps going, it keeps going. Some of these shows that either haven't started production or we're just kind of early in, we could be having to wait longer than we'd like. We spoke to the four villains of Ahsoka: Lars Mikkelsen, Diana Leigh Inosanto, Ivana Sokno, and the late Ray Stevenson. This interview took place at Star Wars Celebration right after the Ahsoka panel. And we hope you listen to it, and especially listen to Ray and how much he loved working on this show and with the people on it. It's a very telling testament to the man and the impact he made. And you can hear that entire chat right after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, do you villains always travel in a pack like this? Is that how this works?
That's how it works.
We come with our own chairs.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it in general just more fun playing a villain? Because it seems like it is.
It is.
Yeah.
It so is.
Well, it is fun. You know? Yeah.
What do you tap into when you have to hit that villainous side?
I think it takes a really good guy to play a good bad guy. Guy or girl. I just put a couple of examples. You know what I mean? It's just like, we have such a laugh. We sort of, you've no idea. It's like, you know, we're known as the nicest baddies.
We are.
Until we got to work.
Yeah.
Lars, as someone that's read every single Thrawn book, I'm super excited to see him brought to life in live action. How excited are you to bring him into the screen in this way?
Very. As you know, I've done the Rebels. So when David finally asked me if I wanted to, there was no doubt. So of course I wanted to do that. So I'm very excited to do it. But the transition between the Rebels and the actual live action character, I hope it works. I hope it works.
Well, how is, if at all, this Thrawn different from the one that you played when you were voicing him? And how is playing him different now that you're doing more than just his voice over Skype?
In a cartoon, I mean, you can sort of up certain things that you can't in real live action. So I think in many ways it's the same character. Yeah, he's based on the same material. But we needed to think, do this right.
Give him a walk.
Yeah.
Well, for those that haven't watched Rebels or haven't read the books, how would you describe Thrawn to someone?
As a top strategist. I mean, he's always like seven paces ahead of anybody else, everybody else. Yeah. Ruthless, of course, but only when it's needed. Actually, I think he thrives also with the creativity of the surroundings. I mean, he's not using people in a bad way. He's using their creativity to reach his goals.
I told him to take all the art off the wall, so you couldn't study us looking at the art. Did you have to go back and watch any old Rebels episodes just to familiarize yourself with how you voiced him and played him before?
No, I didn't really. No, we did needed to do something else. So I wanted not to detach myself from that, but to create something new, in a sense. Yeah.
Diana, did you know when you played Morgan Elsbeth on The Mandalorian that she was going to be showing up here later in Ahsoka? Did they sort of say, we've got a bigger story planned for your character here or not?
No, everything was such a complete surprise. Listen, I didn't even know my name was Morgan Elsbeth until the night it aired. Seriously. I just knew I was the magistrate, so I had to make up this complete backstory. So when, you know, it aired, the night it aired, I was just stunned. I'm like, I have a name. Everybody was making a big deal about Grogu having a name, right? And I'm like, I have a name, you know? But then when I found out that they were going to expand her character, I was just over the moon about this. I just couldn't believe how the planets and the stars aligned. And to be able to work with such a magnificent cast and to grow as an actress and feel that energy, it's a dream come true. You know, it really is.
What's it like filling in more of the character? You said you didn't have a backstory when you did this one episode of Mandalorian. So what is it like now sort of getting to flesh out the character out?
Well, the beautiful thing was Dave was always there to kind of assist me on what her backstory is. And I have to be very careful. But I can say, you know, she's quite the manipulator. And she's we all know she's cold-hearted. But, you know, this is a character that is truly dedicated and loyal to Grand Admiral Thrawn. And there's nothing getting in her way. And what I really love is that we are going to get into her backstory, and I'm just thrilled and excited. And I think the fans are going to be quite fascinated and pretty happy about this, and also to the relationship that she has with her bond of baddies, you know. Yeah.
I like that, the bond of baddies.
Yes, bond of the baddies.
So, what was it like when you had to do that big fight scene and George Lucas is watching you? I mean, that's an extra layer of pressure there.
And Kathleen was there too, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, because they're heroes of mine. You know, they're trailblazers. So when John introduced me to them, I was like, oh my goodness, and it was such an honor, and to have Dave, you know, also there. I mean, you have the most creative minds that were there that day. Because you had, you know, not only Kathleen and George, you had Doug Chang, and then you had obviously John and Dave, and it was just amazing. And then, like, to do this beautiful combative dance with Rosario, I mean, what a beautiful moment, and what a way to bond with her.
Let's talk about the new characters. I know you guys got to be careful with what you say, but Ivana, what can you tell us about your character of Shin?
Shin. She is...
No, that's too much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love you. She, Shin is quite intense and ambitious force wielder. She's very skilled in lightsaber combat. You know, as you're saying, she is a new character, so I don't want to give away too much of who Shin is, as I would love the audience to be able to discover her. But she is Dave's creation, and I hope that despite her darkness of a character, we're able to also understand, expand our understanding of that darkness within someone and the reason behind it. I love her. I really care so much about her, and I feel like it's my job to take care of her and protect her.
Yeah. And Ray, what about your character? I see him going down that hallway. He looks very confident, is the adjective I would use looking at that. Tell us what you can say about him.
It was a revelation, I must admit, because I had no idea what to expect. And you're turning up and you're held. I mean, one of the things that was so overwhelming at first was, I mean, the costumes are works of art. Mm. The set designs, you think, who designed this? And then you look at the set construction, who constructed that? The quality that is surrounding you in technical and creative talent is quite breathtaking, and you've got to summon it up from the balls of your feet to stand your ground and own the space. And you're given that confidence from Dave and John and from your fellow actors, which is incredible. And it's such an untold journey with Baylan and Shin, and they kind of keep you second guessing. Are they? Aren't they? What is going on? What are they actually up to? through their first they appear this, and then it develops into it could be this, or what is it? And then there's something out, something other. So it's a very exciting role to play. And he has a kind of, I would say, inherent nobility. It's like if you don't stand in his way, he's got no malicious attitude at all. But if you do, you'd just be swept aside because there's something that's driving him that Mr. Filoni and Favreau know and is hopefully going to be revealed throughout the telling. And just breathtaking. And I must admit, when the first time you turn a lightsaber on, you make the noise. Everybody does that, and it's but you just can't help it. So it's and just everybody works at such a pitch. I must admit that what I'm overwhelmed with overall is a humility of greatness from the top all the way down through every department. The hours put in, the quality of work, and you can't wait to get back to set. And see what's going to be revealed that day.
I would lose my mind if I got to be in a Star Wars show using a lightsaber. So Rey and Ivana, talk to me a little bit more about that and the training that you guys got to do that as well.
We have an incredible fight coordinator, Ming, who, we were training for months beforehand, and also our trainer, Lacey. Rey and I were, doing ice baths two times a week.
Yeah, boost it and then ice bath. Yeah. It was the first time I was introduced to it, and it was just after that, it becomes addictive.
Yeah.
And you go, is there an ice bath after this one?
Yeah, it has so much to do.
Singing.
Yeah. The training has also, besides just the choreography of it all, it has to do with your connection to your mind and heart and body, and you really begin to, through understanding history of Star Wars and the Force itself, you see how that placates itself into your own life through the flow and learning how to navigate it within
your movement.
Somehow
they train you for your character. Mm-hmm. You know, and you turn up with the stunt team, and it's awe-inspiring what they've developed as a fight sequence because of what they would have already worked out and thrown out and worked through. And it's, you step up until you are a puddle on the ground. But then seeing it on the day come together, and they're working out camera angles while we're actually rehearsing fights. Mm-hmm. All of it is meshed. And it's just, and I stand there stoically going, and then in comes the Viper. Boom, 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 and I'm going, that's, oh, so that's great. And then Rosario's, and see the noise again. You can't have so.
Rey would you constantly make noises. I remember the first scene that we were filming. You came up with a song for Shin. You're like, immediately as we, I can't say too much of the scene itself, but Rey would just constantly walk around the set and be like, who let the Shin out?
Who let the Shin out? Yeah. So, it was the humor on set between us all.
Yeah, there's a lot of humor.
And the magistrate comes up. She's almost like doesn't walk. She can't see glides. Yeah. I can see where the power is. And then When we first encountered Thrawn, I was watching him just the entrance, and you go like, that's an entrance. Mm. And that's what I thought until I saw today's trailer. And you go, no, that's an entrance.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, Lars. You guys just got off the stage, and I was down there. The reaction when they saw the character in the trailer, and then when you came out on stage, tell me about being there for that.
It was a very emotional moment that I didn't expect to have. But I think there's a lot of love to be taken care of from the audience that you need to... it's a lot of love, And I felt enormous gratitude. It was amazing. I've never tried anything like that.
It's a tsunami of emotion. And I love the way that the Star Wars and Lucas films that they keep so much back as a gift back to the fans who made the effort to turn up because it's for them. And we're a band of actors fortunate enough to be worked together and enjoy it. And give it to them on the day, like now, and then it's going to be keeping giving to them as the series unravels.
And don't you feel it's like this sort of this yin and yang kind of relationship, you know, for us as artists, and then you have the fans that are also, you know, the other part of the equation with that. This passion. It's just a remarkable experience. It's hard to describe, but it's really beautiful.
It's a gift to be part of something that you're really proud of. Truly.
Yeah. I had a hard time actually keeping my tears back. You know, I was really tearing up. So, and I didn't expect that. I'm an actor.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It's the perfect way to sum up Star Wars Celebration. A lot of love. I'll tell you, my ear's still ringing from the guy next to me who yelled when they show you in the trailer. I still got a bug in there. Yeah. This was great, guys. Thanks so much for coming over.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to our guests from Ahsoka. And once again, our thoughts go out to the family, friends, cast, and crewmates of Ray Stevenson. We hope you enjoyed hearing his passion for his show. And we will get to see that passion when Ahsoka premieres this August. You can connect with us on social media by following Entertainment Weekly on all socials. It's at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag and follow us directly using at Dalton Ross and at Devin Kogan. Thanks so much, everyone. We'll do it all over again next week.
This episode of Dagobah Dispatch Podcast is hosted and produced by Dalton Ross and Devin Kogan. Produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Executive produced by Chanel Johnson. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.